Before we get into today's episode, I would just like to remind everyone that we have a mailbag episode coming up. So if you have any questions for Jason, David, or anyone else here at Basecamp, please leave us a voicemail at 708-628-7850. And now on to the episode. Welcome to Rework, a podcast by Basecamp about the better way to work and run your business. I'm Sean Hildner.
And I'm Waylon Wong. Back in 2017, we did an episode featuring a legal clinic at the University of Chicago that works with small business owners. The Institute for Justice on Entrepreneurship provides free legal services and works on policy at the city and state level. Beth Krieger is the director.
I'm a lawyer and an advocate and a teacher working on behalf of low-income entrepreneurs.
This year, the IJ Clinic celebrates its 20th anniversary. It's worked with over 200 businesses during that time, and we thought we'd help them mark their big milestone by talking to one of their clients.
When you're kind of the in-house counsel for a startup, every legal decision is intertwined with business decisions. And when you're talking to people who are the one or two people making the business work, every legal decision is intertwined with personal decisions. One of our greatest success stories is Ken Coates. He really managed to do what entrepreneurs do best by really pivoting and changing his business model to meet the challenges and the pushback that he experienced. And his business has grown phenomenally well.
I come from an entrepreneurial, I guess, background. My grandparents, who came up from Mississippi at the time with very little education, started their own restaurant and got into owning real estate on the south side in Inglewood.
In the early 2000s, Kenneth Coates got the idea for his first business, Arrest Free, a service to help people expunge their arrest records. At the time, he was working in the Chicago office of Equifax, the big credit bureau.
I used to be an IT guy there. I used to have family and friends who had questions about, you know, their credit report, like, man, how do I fix this thing? Do you got some insight? Go fix a couple of things, you know, as jokingly would tell me. But then after post 9/11, there became such an intense scrutiny on people's background. Everything was digitized. People were looking at background information more readily. And so it began denying opportunities is what I saw from friends and family who it wasn't so much about, you know, credit, but it was about, man, I just got denied a job opportunity because of some silly thing I did in college or high school. And so I began looking at that issue and looking at the startling statistics to know that one out of every 32 Americans may be plagued with that in terms of having some kind of scuffle in their background, you know, from a criminal record. And then more startlingly, unfortunately for my neighborhood and communities or minorities, it was like one out of three had some type of felony conviction.
According to a study published in 2017, people with felony convictions account for 8% of all adults in the U.S., but 33% of African-American men.
So if you have this record, are you permanently banned from society of being able to, you know, pursue your dreams? I heard about a relief called expungement. I found that it was very simple to apply for, but many people didn't know about it. Unlike a credit mark that falls off, like say after 7 years, an arrest record stays with you permanently forever, unless you go and get that information, you know, expunged, they call it. So that's expungement. That's kind of the permanently destruction of any arrest record that may exist at the agency level or the court level. And so my first venture was a project called Arrest Free. And the whole idea was to give people an opportunity to learn about expungement. They can pull their records online. And similar to like a TurboTax, how it pre-populates the tax fields, would pre-populate the forms they need to print it out with instructions to get their record expunged.
Kenneth launched Arrest Free in 2007. He focused the service on the Chicago area and hired some freelance developers to build it out.
I took all my savings and just jumped on out there.
How did you find your customers?
Just go outside my door. You know, as like I said, unfortunately, as I mentioned, one out of three African Americans had a record. So I did a lot of grassroots guerrilla marketing, going to churches, going to fast food restaurants, passing out pluggers, going.
What are pluggers?
And man, I'm dating myself. This is old school party stuff. But pluggers, they're like little 4x6 pamphlets, you know, flyers with information. Yeah. So, yeah. So I would just pass them out. And I jokingly say, you know, the upswing of it, although the story is not so beautiful, you know, doing your first venture, but the upswing is that I used to brag and say, man, I made more money than Microsoft made in their first year. Like Microsoft, I think, made $15,000 when, you know, Bill Gates first launched. And I think we made like $30,000 or something like that. So it gave me a sense that I can do this. I can create my own path and, you know, and provide a service, you know.
Kenneth wanted to eventually take a rest-free national, but there were some problems.
There were various things that didn't make this thing work as great as I thought it would. And one of them was the price. The most needed population, like I say, people from my neighborhood who were having these issues, who had an issue of affordability, and then even the whole digital divide deal, they didn't have access to computers. So we would take stuff over the phone and, you know, go meet them in person, or me, me and my dog. Okay. We were a big company at the time. So
on top of that, it was the housing crisis and the recession. And then on top of that, the Illinois Attorney General took notice of a rest-free and said Kenneth was providing unauthorized legal services by helping customers fill out the expungement paperwork. Here's Beth Krieger from the Institute for Justice Clinic, which Kenneth had been introduced to during a small business job fair.
There are very strict laws in the books here in Illinois about who can practice law and what it means to practice law. So he was warned by the Attorney General that he could not offer the services he wanted to offer to help people clear their records and try to get jobs. So it was an awful experience. It was an awful thing to learn about. And we wanted to represent Ken in whatever he wanted to do to move forward.
Man, talk about scary. Yeah, it was extremely scary. You know, I jumped out here on this venture, you know, with all my ducks in there, and using this as my only survival as income at the time. And I refused to, you know, try to go back out in the workforce and give up. And at the same time, you have, you know, a big giant government body saying you didn't doing something wrong and that you got to shut it down. The Institute of Justice, they were extremely great, you know, at the time. They, you know, they went to a couple of the hearings with me or what have you to talk about what we were doing. I believe they were ready to fight more than I was like, well, you know, we can make this a big deal. We can get them. And I'm like, no, I'm in the middle of this. In the meantime, I got to eat. So, you know, it's great to get, you know, things in principle, but, I have to eat.
So you just have to like call it.
Yeah. Me and my dog, we have to eat. And I have a daughter too. So I had a daughter at the time. So yeah. So we just, as I call it, reposition.
That's a great example of an entrepreneur facing a decision about not only the future of the business, but what that person wants to do and where that energy should be directed. Should it be fighting for something against, you know, pretty powerful forces like the bar, the lawyers of all people, or should that energy be focused on building something new? And Ken chose to build something new, and what an amazing thing he's built.
Kenneth transformed Arrest-Free into something new, but before he reinvented his business, he did something to ensure that he would have a really hard time returning to his old life as an office worker in a conservative corporate culture.
You know, you go through these crazy things when you decide to become an entrepreneur, you know, to unplug from the matrix. So one of my deals was that, okay, I want to guarantee myself that I do not look back, you know, similar to how they say journals will burn their ships, you know, ashore so that they cannot retreat.
Kenneth got a tattoo. It sits on his lower forearm, and it's an ichthus, more commonly known as the Jesus fish. Inside the shape is the Greek word for fish, ichthus. The tattoo symbolizes Kenneth's Christian faith and his astrological sign, because he's a Pisces.
It would have been frowned upon or maybe less desired, I guess, based on a job I held before, because I was more high visible working in a C-suite with a lot of executives at the time. And you know, very, I call myself Brian Gumbelish. I would, you know, hello, how's it going? You know, do the small talk. And, now that I was back in the neighborhood, I kind of got back into my, you know, who I am truly. So yeah, that was part of my deal, that there was no returning. You know, I wasn't going back.
Kenneth was ready for the second version of his business. He turned to the other side of the background check transaction. If before he was helping people expunge arrest records to improve their chances of getting hired, he was now going to help employers screen job candidates by providing the technology for comprehensive background checks.
One of my mentors kind of beat me up. And as I was telling him all the troubles I was having, you know, launching Arrest Free, because he used to tell me, man, just go and do, you know, traditional background checks and, you know, you can go save the world later. He would tell him, like, no, man, I'm saving the world now. You know, so when I came to him with my tail under, you know, between my legs, he just said, I told you not to do it. So, you know, but he's like, go out there. And, you know, he told me, you know, and gave me kind of some basics on, you know, how to go and do it. I knew it was always there, you know, but it didn't really excite me. It wasn't anything innovative or new. You know, it was just a commodity, and it just becomes about how low can you price things.
Kenneth lined up a college as a client early on, helping the school run background checks on students getting placed into internships in fields like healthcare and social work. As word of mouth spread, he was able to sign other colleges as customers and built a specialized product called College Screen.
And then luckily from there, we got a call from some very large law enforcement agencies that needed more of a deep background investigation. So kind of reignited my spark about, okay, the challenges that people are getting, you know, with, you know, unfortunately getting these records is sometimes questioned, like, okay, the arresting authority, were they on up and up, and who arrested them? Is these valid records, and why is it disproportionately affecting my community? So we had an opportunity to work with some large law enforcement agencies to actually vet them. So I was like, oh man, this is exciting. Maybe there's an indirect way of us still achieving results. Maybe we can't do anything for those who are affected, but moving forward, maybe we can ensure that the, you know, the officers that are patrolling these neighborhoods are good people. So that kind of sparked my interest, I guess, if you will. And so that's, you know, where we're at now. So we work with some of the largest law enforcement agencies across the country, and that's what we do. We help them find great next hires, you know, who can serve the community now. So
when companies talk about running a background check or screening workers, it can mean a lot of different things. Local, state, and federal jurisdictions have their own databases, and sometimes big red flags get missed. That's why companies like Care.com and Uber have come under scrutiny for their screening processes. Kenneth's company, Kentech, can do around 200 different searches, and then he tries to provide a more holistic look at a person so that a single blip on someone's record doesn't automatically doom their chances of getting hired. This approach has helped set Kentech apart from other companies offering more surface-level background checks.
When agencies are conducting these background investigations internally, there's a, you know, unconscious bias about who they think could be a good officer based on whatever. When our clients in New York, NYPD, when an investigator say, hey, I'm not going to hire her. Her dad was a felony convict. Part of the code of new hires is you can't be associated with a known felon or what have you. She overturned and said, well, what that has to do with it? I mean, this kid was, she did volunteer service and did all these great things. He said, no, I think she'll make a great cop. You look for every reason not to hire a person. You now look a little deeper and find out every reason you should hire them that may not fit the standard profile, if you will. You know, our background investigations requires that we actually sit down and speak with the subject about what we found, as opposed to us just turning information over to the private sector and just having them figure it out on their own. So we'll sit down and say, hey, we found these things on you. You want to explain them? And they have the opportunity right there to challenge it or say, oh yeah, well, what that was, you know, whatever their excuse would be. And so I like that give and take and that equal transparency, that they're not caught off guard about what we found. And we call it a unique blend of high tech, high touch. So on the high tech side of background checks, there's a millions of competition, you know, because right now it's all a marketing game. On the other side, you have high touch, which are like private investigations. They're small mom and pops, very fragmented, but no one has uniquely blended both, where we're doing high tech data, you know, building out technology, and then still believing what we call a Barney Fife traditional method of background investigations. And the space that we service is primarily security clearance and gaming and casinos. So not too many people in that field.
With the rest free, it was always just Kenneth and his laptop. After the transition to Kentech, he grew enough to be able to hire staff.
I think after the first solid year of college screens, so this is like 2010. So the second year, I knew I needed to get a salesperson. That was my first hire. I needed a salesperson. I need a person who can help me just do all this stuff that I end up having to do all, you know, at the end of the month, billing and collections and, you know, answering the phones for support issues. So sales to grow fast to see if I can replicate myself in that. And then support, because I was, you know, of course, when you're starting off a one-man shop, you're doing everything. You're processing orders, you're selling, you're meeting with clients, you're doing invoice and then support and, you know, all. So it was just like, it was fun. But after a while, I was like, man, this is not entrepreneurship. I think I was on vacation and I was like, I was just working all the time. I was sitting by the pool, I was up at night and it was like, man, this, you know, this is not fun. So, so I hired somebody. Yeah. I saw that shift, you know, after like the 10th employee, like, you're the man now, Ken. You know, it's not just pizza and, you know, a couple of beers, a paint a garage kind of mentality. You really have to delegate and hold people accountable. So, that kind of shift.
Today, Kentech has about 35 full-time employees and another 25 subcontractors. The company is bootstrapped, although Kenneth says he might consider outside funding after he gains more market share. As always, he's not looking back.
You make up your mind, you're moving forward, then you move forward. You have to show that you are not only capable, but you deserve that opportunity. And no matter how bleak it may get, if you continue to stand up, the door is going to finally open. Like, oh, man, we can't punk this person, you know, in terms of life, in terms of getting out of the matrix, and you'll be let in.
Rework is produced by Waylon Wong and me, Sean Hildner. Our theme music is Broken by Design by Clipart. You can find show notes for the podcast at rework.fm, or you can contact us on Twitter at @reworkpodcast. And once again, I'd like to remind everyone that we are collecting questions for a mailbag episode. So if you have questions for anyone here at Basecamp, please leave us a voicemail at 708-628-7850.
Oh, hey there.
Hi.
Hey, what's up?
I have a Greek question.
Okay.
How do you pronounce the word for fish? I-C-H-T-H-Y-S. You know, like the Jesus fish?
Yeah, ichthos.
Ichthos.
Is it U-S at the end?
It's a Y-S at the end. I-C-H-T-H-Y-S.
Oh. Yeah, let me look it up in my dictionary here, just so I can... verify it. I haven't opened this book in a while.
Your Greek dictionary?
Yeah.
Okay. We will stand by.
So I would say ichthus.
Ichthus. Okay.
Yeah.
Ichthus.
You got it?
Yes. Thank you so much.
Okay. No problem.
Okay. Bye. See you later. Bye.
Is that the first time Alex been on?
Yeah.